I don't know if you guys knew this, but they made the CN Tower blue last night in honor of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That wasn't the CN Tower. That was what was inside Steve Dangle's pants yesterday as soon as the Toronto Maple Leafs were announced as the winners of the 2016 NHL lottery. Yeah. You may have confused that with the CN Tower at Greg Wyshynski, but I assure you, sitting next to Steve Dangle and Luke Fox watching at Sportsnet, the part that is most a man on Steve Dangle was his impression of the CN Tower.
His dangle, if you will.
The Leafs win the lottery last night. I've seen a lot of stories about the biggest winners and losers in the lottery draw last night. I will go ahead and tell you the biggest loser. That would be the National Hockey League. Not because the center of the hockey universe has the top pick and will get Austin Matthews if that's who they want. And boy, oh boy, isn't that going to be exciting to see the Leafs rise to prominence, because as Ian Mendez said last night, the league is better when Toronto is good. But the NHL has to be embarrassed because they rejiggered the lottery, reworked the lottery, tweaked the lottery, did XYZ to the lottery, and the team that tanked still won the lottery. That's embarrassment.
Yes. Well, if you believe in the idea that whomever finishes last should have the most lottery balls and should have the best chance of winning the lottery, I mean, that's the one thing that's come into question through all this and has always been a question of mine. With a salary cap, why do you have a draft lottery? We keep hearing about managing assets, and I mean, the league is now, you look at the CBA, it's triple capped, right? There's a salary cap per team, there's a max per player, and then there's a rookie cap. We keep hearing everything's about managing assets. If that's true, why is there a lottery? Why shouldn't all 30 teams have an equal chance at getting the first overall pick?
You've mentioned this before, and I think it's the single most Toronto-centric argument you make on this show. I'll give you three reasons why. Columbus Blue Jackets. There is a snowball's chance on the surface of Mercury that Austin Matthews would ever play for the Columbus Blue Jackets, or that they would be able to, that their money is going to be worth as much to him as the money from a team in a larger market.
No. You're not listening to what I'm saying here.
I don't understand what you're saying then.
Well, it's a triple cap league right now, so the rookie contracts are the rookie contracts. We keep hearing about managing assets, right? So why should it matter that, like, say, the Chicago Blackhawks win the lottery? If it's going to cost them the $3 million in bonuses on the rookie, that just means they have to send a player somewhere else. Like, why should there be a lottery only for teams that, like, if you want to go the route that you're talking about, disqualifying tanking, that's the way you do it, Greg.
But the Blackhawks...
30 teams, 30 balls. Go for it. It's 2005 all over again with Crosby.
But the Blackhawks would jettison Brian Bickell and then get a franchise player for the next decade because he's an indentured servant under RFA rules and can control that salary any way they want to.
But it would cost you other players along the way then if you're going to have that type of service for that type of player.
But they still get that player.
They're going to get significantly paid. But I'm talking about if you consider the NHL a loser because, you know, the team that tanked the hardest actually won the lottery, unlike last year with the Buffalo Sabres, then what's your alternative? It's one thing to bitch at something that stares you in the face. What's the alternative? My alternative for me, 30 teams, 30 balls. Done.
But the alternative should be that there's absolutely no problem with what the Maple Leafs decided to do. And there's absolutely no problem with what they decided to do because their fans were fine with it. Like, it's not as if the Sabres and the Maple Leafs in the last 2 years handcuffed their fans and said, you're gonna sit and watch us lose and you're gonna like it, dickheads. They were all in on it. People were buying McDavid jerseys last year in Buffalo in the preseason. Yeah. So the idea that tanking is bad because it hurts competitiveness or it hurts the fan base, who does it hurt? At the end of the day, the Sabres got Eichel. And the Leafs are going to get Austin Matthews, and everyone's really friggin' happy.
The one thing I do wonder about Toronto, though, is yes, they put up with the one season of deliberate tanking. Would they put up with two? And now, with Austin Matthews in the Maple Leafs' hip pocket, can they have a bad season next year?
Well, no, listen, I think they can have a bad season next year because I think he's on a desert island right now. I mean, you know, there's still some pieces that have to fit there around him, let's be honest. But
totally.
But what you said is where I agree with the Brian Burkes and the Doug Armstrongs of the world, because the thing that the NHL needs to do is ensure that the Leafs couldn't get a top two pick next year. There needs to be the thing that those guys want, which is to prevent the multiple seasons of suckitude that we've seen from the Edmonton Oilers and that we saw previously from the Quebec Nordique. Or was it Quebec? Yeah, it was Quebec, not Ottawa.
Three,
it was Quebec,
three in
right?
a row. Quebec yeah. three in a row, yeah.
Yeah, you want to prevent the multiple seasons of suckitude and enact some sort of a policy that does not allow the same team to draft. I would say to draft within the top three. If we're going to go with these new rules, it would make sense that the Leafs could do only as good as fourth next year.
Even though the lottery is random. Like, you do understand that part. It is random.
The fact that you win
two in a row, luck. Three in a row, really lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my concern through all of it is, like, if Edmonton would have won the draft yesterday. The headline today would be exactly what you're talking about. We need to create a way that this never happens again. But for, you know, but if we're still talking about that today and trying to fix a problem that happens once every however many decades, like you got to go back to, I mean, when did the Nordiques make those picks, right? We're talking like 89 to 91. Okay, we're talking about that era. This doesn't happen very long. I wonder if it's nothing more than looking at the Matt Duchene offside and the Daniel Briere offside and saying to ourselves, we need to fix a problem that occurs so infrequently, we need to be more concerned with what the after effects of it would be. Like, are we trying to fix a problem that is just completely something that's just a random event, essentially, is what I'm saying.
It's happened twice in 20 years, but I think that there's a difference between, you know, something that can conceivably change the course of a franchise and an offside penalty. Like, the idea that the Leafs could suck for 2 years straight and get a top pick 2 years straight, it shouldn't happen. You get yours. You're allowed to do this once, and I'm fine with it. If that's the course you want to take to improve your team, that's fine with it. But your charity ends there. Your charity should end there. You should be able to get no better than number four in either of the next two drafts because you got yours. Congratulations. You won the lottery. Good job on you. You don't get to win it again for another 4 years. And by the way, if the Oilers had won again last night, we send Steel Team 6 into Edmonton and go and rescue ourselves some top picks, okay? Because they're being held hostage. And I refuse to allow another one to be held hostage.
Best thing for Edmonton as well is getting number four overall. Because number one, two, and three are done. Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, Jesse Puljujärvi. That's done. You know where you have to start thinking in the draft this year, Greg? Four. That's where you have to make a decision. One, two, three are done. You got to get out the brain. You got to polish up the brain at number four. Because that's where you say to yourself, that's when you start talking about Olio Levy, Miguel Sergachev, Matthew Tkachuk, Alex Nylander, Pierre-Luc Dubois. That's when you really have to think.
All right. We have Down Goes Brown coming up on the show today. And we've got a lot to talk about.
You sound
and
cranky,
I
by
think,
the way. No, I
have a cold. I have a
cold sounds,
scratchy
your cold
throat.
Sounds cranky today. Your cold sounds cranky
it's
today.
It's a cranky one. It's not a good cold. It's not your friendly, just lay your head on a pillow and Netflix and chill all day kind of cold. It's a real bitch of a cold. It's one of those colds that you don't know if it's allergies or a cold, but you're pretty sure it's a cold based on how your body's reacting to it. All right. With that, Sammy, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Ooh.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
I just drank coconut water out of a coconut. My wife brought this home, and it was a full coconut, and I tried to just use, like, a regular, you know,
that's right,
that we have at the house.
Full coconut.
I had to end up going down into the basement to get a saw.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
You came so close to one of the all-time Merrick colloquialisms. You almost said, my wife came home, and I went the full coconut.
Honey, put the kids to bed. We're going full coconut tonight.
Gonna take out the saw and chop the head right off. I'm going full coconut.
All right. Don't have to feed the geese today. We're going full coconut, baby.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Down at an English fair.
One of my favorite ones that we've had recently, without question. By the way, Ruby and I were at a street fair yesterday here in New York. And they were selling the coconuts that you chop off the top and put the straw in.
And yeah, you know, the last time that we, yeah, the last time we saw him was in Thailand, and the price disparity between Manhattan coconut prices and Thailand coconut prices, pretty stark. Let me put it that way. You could probably feed a family of four in Thailand with the amount of money you pay for a freaking coconut on the streets of New York City.
And it's what, a nickel in Thailand?
It's like, yeah, whatever like a 5 baht is in Thailand. That's their currency. All right, enough of this. And by the way, I'm sure at some point you'll hear me go bot based on how my internet's going. Joining us now on the line is a guy who should be pretty happy. And I think based on what I saw on Twitter last night is kind of a bit bewildered, kind of still wondering if it's all true. Down Goes Brown, a.k.a. Sean McAdow, joins us now on the MVSW podcast to talk about the Leafs draft victory. DGB, are you feeling okay? Is everything okay?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. It's excitement with a little bit of confusion and bewilderment and waiting to see how this is all going to get undone. Like, you know, how Gary Bettman's going to come out today and pull off the old dusty finish and announce that the Maple Leafs didn't actually win after all. And yeah, I think we're all still kind of waiting for it.
Now, that's a great point. The dusty finish for a draft, dusty finish for a draft lottery, of course, would be that both balls get sucked up at the same time, simultaneously, right? Would be the dusty finish for a draft lottery.
Yeah, exactly. You'd need like the guy who was supposed to be drawing the ping pong balls to get knocked out, and then he comes to and decides that no, it wasn't a six, it was a nine, and you know, Gary Bettman calls for the bell.
If you look at the NHL video too, I think it was Earl Hebner working the ping pong ball machine too.
Oh no, pay attention it wasn't. There. Yeah, or his brother.
Earl
his
Hebner,
brother.
What have you done? Okay, so here's the hard hitting journalist question. So when did the your boner subside last night, Sean?
Well, who says it has?
Because I was with Steve Dangle, and I was fearful for any glasses that were on the table beside him.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a weird moment for me because I was doing this live chat on the Sportsnet site, so you know, I wasn't like out at the bar or you know in a situation where I could do a few laps around the block kind of thing. So I sort of had to play it mostly cool. But I was watching with my kids, and it was funny because my kids aren't really big into the NHL, but they like the lottery. They like going on the website and playing the lottery simulator and trying to get the Leafs to come up. And they had been into it last year because they understood that the whole Connor McDavid thing was a big deal, and they had been sort of disappointed when the Leafs didn't win. And I had to pull them aside last year and say, like, you know, kids, you need to understand, if you're going to be Leaf fans, you need to get used to this, because nothing good is ever going to happen to the Maple Leafs. And so they went in last night, you know, prepared, and at that moment when it became, you know, even when it became apparent that the Leafs were in the top three and that, you know, something, things hadn't gone the absolute worst case scenario, there was some confusion, and they're kind of looking at me like, Dad, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea.
Can we pause on that for a second? Because I thought that was amazing television last night. I really did. Like, the fact that they took all those guys away from their little desks and put them all in their own little chairs, like it's the Bachelorette finale, and the piano music they were playing in the background as Daly goes through the picks. I thought it was amazingly compelling television last night for what it was. I don't know about you guys.
It was really good. My daughter actually did turn to me at one point. She says that the music is scaring me a little bit. So
right.
You know, that kind of, the NHL sort of nailed it. Because I've said in the past, like, the way they've done the unveiling in past years has never totally worked for me. You know, it's sort of been anticlimactic. And I felt like, you know, I know the league doesn't want to make too big a deal out of this because, you know, for various reasons. But I've always felt like they should have done more. Like last year with Connor McDavid, I would have drawn one ball before the game, one ball at each intermission, and then done the fourth ball at the end, and just let everybody see the recalculated odds, and let everybody flip out.
Wow.
I mean, imagine that, because remember, the Leafs had the best odds at the going into that last one. Imagine everybody losing their minds for 45 minutes. So I was a little bit disappointed to see them kind of do the same old approach last night. But you're right, it really did work. The tweaks they made, and just the fact that there were three teams, and you know, suddenly you're not just waiting for, okay, it's either going to be the right team or it's going to be the wrong team, and the whole thing's over, and we know what happened.
Right.
And then the way it worked out with the tension of the first seven or eight teams showing up where they're supposed to, it really, you know, it just built and built. And, well, you know, for whatever reason, it worked.
If I may proffer a theory, I think it's because this was a very Canadian affair. You didn't have goofballs like Vinny Viola's son showing up there for the Panthers. This was a very, 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 you guys take this shit real seriously. I don't know if you know that. And I think it was a very Canadian affair last night. Very prim and proper. Let's follow all of the rules and regulations and find out who gets the ball.
Yeah, there's nothing more Canadian than a bunch of executives who have good luck charms and won't even tell you what they are. You know, they can't
even
keep that a secret. They're trying to dig this information out of these guys, and they're like, "Oh no, I have a top secret that good luck charm that I can't tell you about."
Yeah, I tried to get that out of Brian Burke on the program yesterday. Did the Islanders Tampa game yesterday afternoon with Elliot, and tried to get out of Brian, no dice. Tried to get out of JD, no dice. And then second intermission, we were talking to Trevor Linden, so I was talking to him before the broadcast. I'm like, "You ever get a lucky charm?" He goes, "Oh yeah, I got this Pat Quinn hockey card. Want to see it?" I'm like, "Oh, no. Will you do this on TV?" He goes, "Yeah, sure, why not?" And I'm like, "Oh, thank God. Finally someone who's not ridiculously superstitious."
He went into the draft with the good luck charm of Pat Quinn, the former Maple Leafs player, coach, and GM. And it worked perfectly. We in Toronto
It was Quinn as a Canuck, though. I think it was a 74 card, I think. But, yeah, nonetheless. You know what, and Greg, you nailed it, too. This was an all-Canadian affair, right? This is a big one for Canadian hockey fans. I mean, this is, you know, Canada's Stanley Cup because all seven teams had a shot at the first overall pick. But unlike last year where it focused on Connor, right? Like, it focused on the kids. I thought it was a lot more compelling, and I know, listen, a lot, and a couple of guys that I talked to yesterday kind of said, you know, "Hey, listen, you know, off the record, you know, we do kind of, you know, we're off to our draft meetings, this is an extra flight for me this weekend, I don't need this, I'm going to sit there like a prop all night long, you don't really need me here," and that's essentially what they were. And I'll say one thing on behalf of all those guys, whether it's a general manager or a president, good for them for going along with the program yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you're Don Sweeney and you're 14, like, you're on your way to your draft meetings. Do you need an extra flight? No, you probably don't. But for the good of that moment and for the good of the marketing of the draft, good for those guys for showing up and sitting there in those, you know, relatively uncomfortable seats for an hour and a half. Like, from all of them, from Burke to JD to all of them, to, you know, for all 14 general managers / presidents, good for them for showing up yesterday to be essentially glorified props for the Toronto Maple Leafs and Austin Matthews.
Yeah. Right, like Ray Shiro. It wasn't Keith Kincaid that showed up. Ray Shiro showed up. You know, it's like they were all there.
Totally.
All the people that needed to be there were there.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to, you know, 2 months down the line when some big blockbuster trade happens at the draft, and we're then told that, you know, well, what was the genesis for when did this start? And it's going to be, well, when we were locked in that room for an hour back at the draft lottery, you know, we started the conversation, and maybe we'll get something out of that.
That is such a good point that always gets lost. That and this is why I've lobbied for trade deadline actually be, you know, a 2-day affair where general managers are all in the same room or all on like a glorified draft floor again. Because when these guys all get together, things start and things happen and things get actualized, as opposed to shoot me an email, shoot me a text, call them on the phone. Like, when you get all these guys in a room and guys start talking to each other face to face, that's where things start to unclog and that's where things start to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, you know, the draft is about the draft and Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine and all that. But, you know, the draft is where the beginning of the Phil Kessel trade happened, which almost turned into a TJ Oshie trade. And then it went back to being a Phil Kessel trade with the Pittsburgh Penguins last year. Like, that's where it all starts. The minute you get all these guys, that's a great point, Sean. Whenever you get all these guys together, that's where things finally start to happen. It's a great point.
All right, so obviously the Leafs are taking Matthews, we assume, yes?
I would think so,
Oh, God, yeah.
And obviously the Jets are taking Laine because that's going to be basically 50 goals a season, him playing with Scheifele for the next 5 years. Do you think
and
the
Nick
Jackets
Ehlers.
Move... Yeah, I know. God, that's the thing, man. Like, it's funny. Like, I think the Jets are going to be exponentially closer to contention than the Leafs will be, provided it's not some Hail Mary like signing Tavares that happens in the next 2 years. And I think that Buffalo is going to be remarkably closer to contention than Edmonton will be. It's like the same thing both years. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the the Jets are further ahead than the Leafs in where they're headed, and they also have the added bonus of they know who their goaltender of the future is, whereas the Leafs still have a massive question mark. And you know, that is something when you look at the Leafs, this is great news. It's fantastic. They're going to finally have that number one center that they haven't had since Matt Sundin. But it, you know, it's not like this was the final piece of the puzzle. There's still a bunch of gaps. The blue line doesn't have its Drew Doughty, Duncan Keith piece yet that you seem to need. There's nothing coming in the ways of the goaltending. So there's a lot of questions left, and I would agree. I think they're on the right track, absolutely. But yeah, the Jets are further ahead, and the Sabres, you know, maybe further ahead than the Oilers as well, with the exception being that, you know, this is still a league where the truly elite number one guys like the Connor McDavids and the Sidney Crosbys, they do tend to not necessarily guarantee you a cup, but it's about as close as it comes. And you know, I know Sabres fans, they love Jack Eichel. I do too. He's a great player. I don't think he's quite necessarily in that class, but certainly, yeah. You look at some of the assets that team has and still has coming on the way, and you know, I think the world of Tim Murray as a GM. So they're in great shape.
Yeah, do we think that
Buffalo's picking eighth? They're going to get a good player.
They are. Now, do we think that the Jackets will hold on at three, or they'll try to trade the pick for more help?
You know what's interesting about this one? Hang on, can I jump in on this one quick? Because we had John Davidson on in the first intermission last night. He's so great. And he let something slip, but afterwards said, I probably shouldn't have said that. Interesting that JD said, yeah, there's two players at the top of this year's draft, indicating sort of, listen, if we don't get Matthews or Line A, we may be in the market to move something here.
The only interesting thing about that is that they've got so many contracts they've got to move. Like you could package a contract with that pick, in dealing that pick, get a great package back, but also get yourself rid of one of those contracts too.
You could. That's a tough sell though to fans that are, you know, the long suffering Blue Jackets fans. If that ends up being kind of what you use that number three pick for to unload a previous mistake, it might be the smart thing, but it could be a tough sell. But I mean, you look around the sports world. We just said, you know, the NFL draft this weekend as well. You know, this is the trend, is that the smart teams more and more are looking to move down, and that this idea that it's better to stockpile picks. And basically, I think it's an understanding though, the draft, there's so much luck involved that, you know, if you're going to play a luck-based game, you want to have as many chances as you can, get as many lottery tickets as you can, and then, you know, that increases your chances of hitting that jackpot. And that unless there's somebody that you really think is head and shoulders above the next tier down, that it can make a lot of sense to try to move down. So, you know, I'm sure that, you know, the Blue Jackets will at least consider it, and will be open to that. And, you know, who knows? The other piece that, you know, that we haven't really talked about, and maybe we shouldn't spend much time on it because it's more of a pipe dream than anything else, but, you know, there is this sort of unique situation with Austin Matthews this year, with him being the kid from Arizona, and there is this question of how big and how much do the Arizona Coyotes want this kid? You know, do they view him as just another top prospect, or do they view him as maybe a once in a lifetime opportunity in that market? And on the off chance that they do, what then happens as far as them potentially trying to move up, maybe move up all the way to number one, or maybe do it in a couple steps? Maybe they, you know, they call up the Maple Leafs and the Leafs say, look, we have no interest in picking seventh, forget it, get out of here. But then the Coyotes say, okay, well, what if we could get up to number two? And then, you know, would you flip then? And, you know, there hasn't really been much indication from the Coyotes that they have that interest. There have been talks, you know, the owner saying, look, we're not going to move Ekman Larson, forget about that. And, you know, of course, they don't even have a GM in place yet who could make that kind of decision. So, again, it's maybe more wishful thinking than anything, but that could really be the one wild card wrench that you throw into things. If they bring in a new GM, or if that owner just decides, you know what, this is, like I said, once in a lifetime shot, go out and get this kid. Because they certainly, of all the teams that, you know, potentially could be looking to do that are in that sort of top 6, 7, 8 range, they've got the assets to do it if they really decided that they were willing to pay any price to get it done.
Yeah, and then their new GMs.
I don't think they have the assets to get it from Toronto.
Their new GM's really going to be so young, it should just be him and Kyle Dubas playing Xbox together and just kind of working out the trade that way.
Exactly. But, it'd be the first ever trade where there's Pokemon cards involved as a throw-in.
Exactly. They make the entire trade in emojis. Listen, I think.
But,
yeah, I think
but hang on,
points...
but hang on, hang on, hang on.
Go ahead.
Let me jump on one thing that Ashan just said, because I think it's an important one here, too. Rightfully so, even though everyone tried to draw the name, you know, the name Austin Matthews out of Brendan Shanahan yesterday, the Leafs didn't, nor should they, say who they're going to say who they're going to draft. They never should. What is the point of going doing a Sean Stamkos campaign?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's zero point because a team may just show up and knock your socks off. I don't think it's going to be Arizona. I don't think they have the assets to do it. But who's to say there isn't someone else out there that could do the same?
Yeah,
the problem is in Toronto, I mean, they're chumming the waters with Austin Matthews right now. I mean, by the time we get to the draft, this guy's going to be Superman because of how everyone's talked about it. But still, no point in naming who you're going to take because who knows who's going to be out there to make an offer.
You look at the Leafs, the front office that they've assembled, and, you know, it a lot of progressive thinking, a lot of analytics, and, you know, this strikes me as a team that is not going to say, you know, no, this is off the table. We're not even going to consider it. There is going to be a tipping point where potentially an offer would just be literally too good to refuse, and you have to figure out a way to move forward. And I think they absolutely could do that. I mean, you say, you know, well, would the market accept that after? Yeah, you put Brendan Shanahan in front of a camera and have him explain what they're doing. I think he could sell that to the fans. Again, 95% chance that this is meaningless because nobody out there is, you know, the GMs in the league these days, they're so risk adverse and timid. Nobody wants to make the big offer. But if it does come from somewhere, I think the Leafs are one of those teams that's going to maybe put away the emotion of the situation a little bit and be willing to just crunch the numbers and say, you know, at some point the value is too much to pass up.
I want to get back to Arizona in a second, but you think they would flip flop with the Jets if they gave him the second and Trouba?
Well, I mean, that's the question.
Nope.
You know, we don't know. You know, it's not so much how do you rank the one and two guys, because I think it is at this point, we've been talking a top three for a few months, but it feels like it's kind of become a one and one A situation now. You know, we don't know who they have in what spot and how close they have them. You know, I think if, you know, they could be sitting there and, you know, they, again, playing the cards close to the vest and, you know, but maybe Mark Hunter, whoever it is telling Brendan Shanahan, look, I've got these two guys virtually the same. So if somebody comes knocking and, you know, Winnipeg wants to flip and move up, then yeah, let's see what sort of value we can extract. And, you know, there's so much pressure on GMs these days not to make these moves because the hockey world is so, this age of instant analysis and instant criticism and, you know, who got ripped off and who needs to get fired because they made this trade. There's certainly going to be a lot of pressure to just say, you know what, we're just going to take the cards that we were dealt and we're going to use the pick. But, you know, I do think there are certain scenarios that could open up where I think if you're a GM and you're doing your job, you know, this is something you have to look at. And if the Leafs decide to do that, they're well positioned because they got a bunch of smart people in the background crunching the numbers and figuring this stuff out. And then you got Lou Lamoriello to go and be the closer.
Yeah. On the Arizona thing, it still bugs me. Everybody I've talked to down there tells me the same thing, which is that Matthews would have been a benefit. It's obviously an interesting sell to the fan base. But ultimately, the biggest thing they need to do is win. And I think the group they're building down there can win. I don't think they need to go all in to get a Matthews. I also don't think that, and this was floated by Kevin Allen today, that anyone in Arizona and in their fan base gives a flying shit about a kid named Tkachuk and that being a draw. Like, they thought that they're going to move up and try to get Tkachuk just because of the legacy there as a marketing ploy is nonsensical.
Yeah.
It's all about winning down there. And I think they take a huge step backwards if they try to load up just because the kid's from Arizona. Maybe down the line he comes back and plays there, provided the franchise is still there. But that said, you know, there's only one other thing other than Wendell Clark Jr. that's going to be catnip to Toronto. That's a kid named Domi. So there you go. You start the trade there, and you build off that.
Yeah.
Exactly. You you throw him out there his first game, and half the Leaf fans would be wondering why this kid isn't dropping the gloves and what's wrong with him.
That's right.
And change his number to 28. It is such a fascinating one. I had one scout. Let me get your thoughts on this one, guys. I had one scout that I talked to last week. Eastern Conference scout that whose opinion I really respect. I say, how close are Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine in your opinion? And he said, well, let me put it to you this way. He said, let me ask you a question. If Austin Matthews were a winger and not a center, who would go first overall? Because it really talks to, A, the quality of Austin Matthews, but also, B, the fact that he's a centerman, right? And when you have your shot at getting that guy, you take it. Even if you think that as a winger, Patrick Laine is a better winger than Austin Matthews is a center, in that situation, even when it's that close, your default has to be the center, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does, and certainly for most teams, and the Leafs are one of them, because the Leafs have already got Mitch Marner, who's probably going to play wing. They've got William Nylander, mm-hmm. who they're
he
trying
will.
To at center, but he could end He'll up being on the wing and certainly could flip back. They've got, you know, James Van Riemsdyk is potentially still part of the long-term plan. So they're not set at wing, because I don't think they're set anywhere, but they're closer at wing probably than anywhere else. You got to think they go for the center, but, yeah, I mean, today's NHL, this is... you know, how do you win when you don't have that number one guy, especially if it's a guy like Matthews, where you see some of the scouting reports that are, you know, they're not comparing him to the Sidney Crosby type, but more to the Jonathan Toews, Anze Kopitar type player who could develop into that two-way guy. You know, I mean, those guys are just gold in today's NHL. And, you know, even if you go and get a winger, if he's anything short of Alexander Ovechkin, which, you know, maybe this kid could be, you're probably in a situation where you'd rather have that guy up the middle.
Let me ask you this, Sean. I mean, you follow this team closely. This is the last one for me. Let me ask you this. How many kids in the lineup are you comfortable with? Tell me where to stop, okay? Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Shoshnikov, Brown, Hyman, Kapanen. Are they all in the lineup next year?
You know, if we're talking next year, I think there's a good chance that, you know, certainly you wind up with four or five of those guys for sure, and other guys who are maybe swapping in as the season goes on. Remember what they did this year with Nylander, for example.
Sure.
They had him down in the AHL, even at a point where he was clearly showing that he was too good for the AHL. He was ready to come up, and they sort of held off, and then got him in with 20 games or so left. And you could see something like that with some of those other guys. You know, again, next year should be yet another year that's part of the so-called process in Toronto, which is a nice way of saying more pain is coming. This is going to be another year where they're you know, they shouldn't be finishing dead last next year, I think. You know, they're not going to be contending for a playoff spot, probably. You have to think. I don't think they're as far away from that as some people who maybe don't follow the team as closely think they are. You know, there's people out there who still say, yeah, they're 4 or 5 years away. I don't think it's that far. I think next year maybe could be the last year of the write-off seasons. But yeah, get as many of those guys in as you can. Let's take a look. They're not all going to work out. You know, this is the fun part for Leaf fans, because you got all these prospects and you can think each guy, you know, has the guy that he projects to be as potential as, you know, if he hits his best case. But they, not all of them will. Some of these guys are going to be duds. Some of these guys, in a few years won't even be in the league. Some of these guys are going to be in the league, but not in the role you were anywhere close to the role you were hoping for. And you sort of roll the dice and you know, see how many of them turn out to be what you're hoping for. But there's only one way to find out. And if they're ready to go, you know, development-wise, if you can sit there and say, this guy doesn't have anything left to learn in the AHL, he's got to move on to the next level, then get him in there. And if that means you got to ship a veteran out, or if you got to, you know, take them, go hide them in a basement somewhere with Stefan Robida and whoever else, then you do that. And let's see what the kids can do.
Say it correctly, Sean. It's called Robida Island.
Yes,
that's how we refer to it around here.
We believe that. Nobody has confirmed that. We haven't been able to get that information out of them.
On top of all that, Matthews is going to have a power play in 2 years that features Stamkos and Tavares because of Ontarian Manifest Destiny. So everything's cool. Down goes Brown. You're a gentleman and a scholar, and we love you so much. We're so proud of you and proud of the Leafs for their efforts last night. Tremendous job.
Yes, thank you. I can't accept all the credit personally, but I'll accept a portion.
Perfect. Thank you, John.
Thanks, bud.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. The funniest man in hockey, funnier than me or Merrick or anybody else that you think is funny. Down goes Brown, celebrating the Leafs' amazing victory last night in the lottery.
Let me ask you this then. Does this temper their pursuit of Steven Stamkos? Like, if you look at Austin Matthews, Nazem Kadri, William Nylander, is there room for another centerman here?
First of all, there's room for a winger.
Okay.
Do you think Steven Stamkos? Yeah. Do you think Steven Stamkos is coming to a team that is going to make him a winger? That's the problem in Tampa, or one of them.
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. The problem in Tampa is that he doesn't like his coach, and he doesn't think he's being used correctly. His coach is in love with three other guys. And what everything else that involves him, you know, the geographic benefits to him moving to Toronto, would that trump him being in that role? I don't know. But here's the thing. Here's the flip of it. Does the Leafs apparently having some semblance of direction and slowly moving their heads out of their own asses, what does that mean to Steven Stamkos? Because I think the thing that we've also said about Stamkos is that he's not going anywhere where he can't win. Well, now all of a sudden you get yourself an Austin Matthews to build around. Now all of a sudden you got a little something going on up there. Maybe that ups the ante for him a little bit as far as going to Toronto.
Could be. I think that, you know, situations like this act as a Pied Piper for other free agents as well, where once upon a time is, oh, man, you can't go to Toronto. It's death. I mean, you don't get a moment's peace.
Still
the
is.
Problem is, but it still is. But at the same time, and it's been said going back to, you know, the day after, you know, Jim Pappin scored the game-winning goal and George Armstrong got the insurance marker that we've all seen in 1967, the day after that happened, you win in Toronto, you write your own ticket. It's almost like you go to the Hall of Fame automatically. Yeah, I've said this before. Go look at the 1967 Leafs roster and count the Hall of Famers. Like, you do it in Toronto, that's it. That's your career. You'll never pay for another meal.
Babcock
You'll never
there.
Have to buy another
car.
Well,
Babcock
went. It's part of it.
Babcock
totally.
went to go there for like $1 billion too. But anyways,
but that's where you write legacy position, right? Like, never discount someone trying to write their own legacy. And if, I mean, how many guys have tried, right? Every whether it's, you know, general managers or coaches or superstar players, that's where you go to write the legacy. And if you can do it in Toronto, you write your legacy pretty fast.
And
I think you're
right on
that, Greg. I really do.
The last thing I want to say about this is this nonsense about the league's better when Toronto's good. It's just horseshit. It's like
league is wealthier when Toronto is good.
Sure it is, but the NHL has become a multi-billion-dollar industry in the last decade, the last 10 years, with Toronto being an also-ran, with Toronto being a train wreck. Like, we didn't need Toronto to build Chicago, to build Boston, to build Philly, to build Pittsburgh. We didn't need Toronto for any of that. And that's why the NHL is where it is right now.
If Toronto was healthy during that era, you don't think the NHL would be better off financially?
I think Toronto being healthy is great. I think the Rangers being healthy is great. I think any big market being healthy is great. But I mean, for God's sakes,
don't you think the NHL needs like a really strong villain team? The one that can vanish players like Lou Lamoriello has the ability to do in Toronto. We just mentioned Stefan Robida. He turned into Kaiser Sose pretty fast. He played the last exhibition game, but they never saw from again.
But that's it. That's any successful team, though. Like, the Blackhawks have become the villains. Like, if Montreal, I happen to believe a stronger Montreal team is more important to the NHL than a stronger Toronto team. That's my belief.
You don't think for one second that with a successful Maple Leafs team, that Maple Leafs fans will be the most insufferable, period.
They already are.
Because they're everywhere. They're everywhere already.
And what does a successful Maple Leafs team really do? They already have the television contract. They already sell a shit ton of jerseys. Every game's still sold out. Like, even when they suck, there's engagement.
First of all, they've had a crappy year and the ratings have gone along with it. And second of all, playoff gate is enormous. That's a $3 million house in the playoffs every single night. $3 million house.
But it's not as if it's Boston where they're drawing 11,000 a game or Chicago at the end of the Wirtz dictatorship. I mean, it's not about resurrecting them. It's not about resurrecting the market. The market's already healthy. It's just the team sucks.
Yes, and now it's about to become that much more. I mean, it's funny because, you know, Leafs fans have always been called walking ATM machines, and to an extent they are. Brendan Shanahan has been saying all the right things. We thank the fans for sticking with us, and you know, I've always been of the mind that when you're honest with them that way, You know, they'll stick with you for that one season. That's why this one is this season coming up is way more interesting than last season. It's easy to do the first season, the rebuild, because you're still selling hope, right? At what point do you start to demand wins? And at what point does that marketplace really start to get frustrated, bordering on angry? Ask the Oilers what that's like.
Yeah.
Ask All Edmondson right, we got, what that kind of pain is.
We only have a couple minutes left, so let's hit the on-the-ice stuff. Really impressed
what?
With the
Games?
Adjustments the Penguins made in Game 2 against the Caps. Smart with the puck, really D'ing up Ovechkin well, and I think it's on his line mates to give that guy a little bit more room and a little bit more a chance to shoot versus depending on Ovi to always create his own shot. They're spoiled that way, and when someone else shuts them down, I feel like they don't know what to do. Orpik gets a game, obviously, yes?
I think so, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
Dare I say two?
We do this, we're doing this on a Sunday afternoon before the ruling, by the way. Yeah.
It's gonna be one, it's gotta be one for sure. That's a, mm-hmm. oh man, I don't know that I'm gonna get the memory of watching Mata try to stand up with that stick sort of stuck around his arm and his back and that glassy eyes and, oh god, it looked awful.
If nothing else,
one, maybe two.
Yeah, and it could be two because, I mean, it's the expected. I think Mata's going to miss three, so that'd be two games for their defenseman, maybe a little eye for an eye, but at least one. I am happy that the Orpik hit gave Mike Milbury a chance to trash Orpik because, as you know, Orpik hurt a Bruin once, so that means
Louis
that
Erickson.
he's on a tee for Milbury. So that's it. Lightning Islanders, two harbingers of doom potentially for the Islanders in that game too. Hedman took over the game. I thought it was amazing in that game.
It was great.
And
he's so good.
He's a player who can easily exert his will on a series. And if the triplets decide they're going to be the triplets again, you could punch their ticket for the conference final. I mean,
you saw what Cooper did, right? Cooper, every time that fourth line was out there, boom, triplets.
Yeah.
And you're right. Hedman was outstanding.
Fourth line was really good for the Islanders in Game 1 as far as setting the tone and tempo, but they looked lost in Game 2 against a good line.
Because,
right.
Because no one tried to push back. No one, like none of those guys in that line wanted to push back or let him engage. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty simple.
And great
thing,
job.
Here's where you have to give it up to Tampa. Okay, so Tampa on Wednesday got beaten, and they got beaten up. And the worst place to have a comeback game like that where, you know, your lack of physicality has been questioned, the last place you want to play the next game is at home because everyone is expecting you to push back and be tough and don't take that crap and all that. But good for Tampa, they did. Now, they were rougher than we've seen in the first period, but then periods 2 and 3, man, they brought that game to a boring standstill, didn't they? Like, there were long stretches where Tampa didn't let any emotion enter the game. It was great.
And also
long
stretches without a whistle, too. I remember leaving the room for a second, then I came back. It was 7 minutes later in the game. It was crazy. It was a solid win for them and some good signs for them going forward. Anything we're doing this show before games two in the other two series, but anything catch your eye in those other two series?
Really impressed at Dallas, what they're able to do. I would expect this afternoon in about an hour and 15 minutes here, for the St. Louis Blues to be like a pack of hounds all over Jamie Benn. And it's only a matter of time, I think, before, you know, players like Tarasenko can start sniping on the Dallas netminders.
Yeah, and it was interesting because everybody came into that game one thinking, okay, Dallas is going to be a sieve defensively compared to Chicago, and the Blues defense is going to be stout compared to the Wild. And it was the opposite. So we'll see how the rest of that series plays out. It's great hockey and good ratings,
and
by the way,
San
here in the
Jose.
States. For
the
Caps
good?
And Pens. Yeah, they won the night 18-49, lost the night in ratings to CBS because I have to watch my stories, say the old people as they tune into a rerun of NCIS. But yeah, it was good numbers. And San Jose, by the way, again, like, at some point, we all got to take a step back and really appreciate what Pete DeBoer is doing there. Whatever he's done to figure out the approach, the temperament, and everything else that those players needed to not freak the hell out in the playoffs, it's working. Because they look so poised. They look so... They look like they got the name on the cup already. They're so poised.
Now, have you heard anything about Pekka Rinne? Because that Joel Ward move really twisted him up pretty good.
I haven't, but that's the other thing too about Ward.
Yeah.
I mean,
Ward's
again,
been great,
like,
and he's been real good. But I wonder about Nashville, and I haven't seen anything today about Pekka-Rinne, but
ooh, that wouldn't be good.
But yeah, give it up to San Jose, man. And what a third period by the Sharkies.
And finally, to all of those Washington Capitals fans that have been staring at their Eric Fair jersey in their hands for the last 24 hours. Just burn it. You're never wearing it anyway. Don't try to change the letters around into someone else's name or change the number into something else. Don't go to the game and put tape over it that says traitor. Just burn it. You're never going to wear it again anyway.
I feel so betrayed by Eric Fair. How could you do this to us?
Congratulations to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Congratulations to the Winnipeg Jets. Sorry, Edmonton. Sorry, Vancouver. Congratulations to the Columbus Blue Jackets as well. Thanks to Down Goes Brown. Thanks to Sammy. Thanks to everybody who was around for the Sunday edition. And we'll see you again on Tuesday. Bye, everybody.
Tuesdays. Bye.